Hello, it is Bootstrapped Web. Jordan, what's up, buddy?
What's happening, Brian? Good to speak with you again. It's Friday. Right.
Hey, we got 2 weeks in a row.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. We'll see. We'll see
if we can keep going.
What's on the list this week? What do we got?
So last week, right as we were doing the podcast, Justin Jackson walked in because they were in town for like a little mastermind group or retreat. It was really cool to go to lunch with him and his co-founder and a few other people and some people from Portland and just sit around a table and bring those internet friends into real life. And that was cool.
I say this like four times a year. Like I really want to move to Portland just because like everyone lives there. Like I could just go meet people here. I feel like there's nobody around here. There are people in the tri-state area, but nobody likes to drive anywhere around here because you're going to hit traffic no matter which direction you go. And you know,
yeah, it does feel that the Portland vibe overall really goes nicely with our general approach to business and like not looking at it from a New York point of view and not a San Francisco point of view and something in between. And there's a good community here and it's very livable and so on. They're off to a great start and they're starting to come across with Transistor specifically I'm talking about now. A lot of those same big decisions on where you go on the pricing, how do you differentiate? So it was just cool to talk through those things with people that are just like a few stages, you know, before where we are now, and we have our own set of issues, and it was just kind of cool to have that and have a good time and eat together.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, a couple new things that just popped up on my radar. I'm going to be speaking at a little conference called WP Elevation out in LA. That's going to be June 7th. Excited to go do that. Later in the year, I'm going to be at Cabo Press with Chris Lemma and the crew there. So those are two sort of like WordPressy conferences. But the WP Elevation, I'm really excited about because that's like agency owners. And I always like to talk about productized services and connect with those folks, especially with ProcessKit rolling out. It's sort of like the right kind of crowd to be talking to. So yeah, excited about it.
Yep, very cool. And I want to talk about ProcessKit and the video you posted. You and I talk about this regularly, so I have a better idea than most people, I would assume, on what you're doing. But the visual changes the whole thing. It connects what the person watching the video, it makes it personal to them. Like, here's how I would be using that now that I see it. And it definitely increased the feeling of need internally. It connected the two. I'm like, this is what the software does that conceptually, but then what it looks like is, oh, here's how this is what we would be doing with it. These are the people that I would be inviting. This, it made it like much more real.
Yeah. Let me explain what it is what you're talking about there. So I recorded like an 8-minute video. What I wanted to do with this video was like walk through the app as if I'm like pretend that I'm using it for setting it up and using it for my company. And I wanted to just show all the features that currently has included, everything that you can currently do in ProcessKit is included in this 8-minute walkthrough video. The reason why I put this video together now is because this video basically marks that line that I was talking about last week, where it's like, everything you see here, this is what I'm considering enough to be able to go out and start inviting users to come sign up for it. And so now I actually have something visual, like you said, that I can just link somebody to, like, here, you want to know what it is? Look, it's all in this video. Because I tweeted about this a couple days ago. Like now that I'm in those like final yards of like finishing up the features I wanted to build and you know gearing up to invite the first users, there's all these different things that need to click into place in terms of rolling out a new product. Like I'm going to need a marketing site. I'm going to need some sort of like onboarding process, even if it's done manually by me. I'm going to need, you know, I'm thinking about like a marketing plan and all this stuff. But I can't do most of that because there's only one of me and there's only, you know, so many hours in a day. So this video, I felt like it was the smallest, quickest thing that I could possibly do to have like in place of a legit marketing site, basically. Because I have the site up, it's a one pager, it's just a manifesto landing page that says, hey, it's coming sometime, enter your email address, get on the early access list. That's all it is. And I've been talking about how I've been having a lot of calls with people like every week. one of the most common questions is like, well, what is it? what can it do? And I've been like verbally describing the features to people, and that's just, you know, that's really tough. So yesterday I made this video, I put it out on Twitter, and I put it up on the on that one pager site that we have now. So at least people coming to the site now can now have that visual. So that'll like hold it over for another couple of months before I get a legit marketing site actually built out that shows what it can do.
Yeah, that's fine. You'll attract the true believers who understand and feel the pain most acutely if a description and a video is enough for them to say, "Ooh, I want to try this."
Right.
It probably makes it more likely that there are people in your existing audience that know you and trust you and whatever. It's all good for that first concentric circle outward from the initial launch.
Yeah. But I have been somehow attracting people to the early access list, and they fill out the survey and everything. And I've had calls with a bunch of them that don't know me. They see Process Kit sort of passed around on Twitter. I think a couple of people actually said that they Googled and found it. I don't know how the site is ranking for anything at this point, but it is, you know.
Okay. And what I noticed in that video, I noticed you describing some of the features that you were up in the air on whether or not to build. And so it looked to me like you chose a few of those and built them.
Yeah. So we recorded like a week ago now, and I was talking about user assigning users to tasks. That is built now. I built that a couple days ago, finished it up yesterday. And basically that means I already had the ability to invite users to Process Kit. Now you can assign them to tasks in a process, but you can also assign them to your process templates. So when you create a template, you could say this step should always be assigned to Jordan, and this step should always be assigned to Justin. And then you copy that template to that process to a project, and then you know, those steps are automatically there. The assignments are already registered.
It makes sense that it would be maintained because it's probably the same person in your organization that you want to handle that task.
Oh, so actually just real quick on that user thing, the thing that I'm still finishing up today, still coding today, is the ability to go view a person on your team and see all of their current assignments. So you could pick anyone on your team and say like, what's that person working on this week? These are the tasks that they currently have assigned to them. That's actually something that like we don't even have a good way to do that in audience ops today. Like we actually have a hard time seeing like a writer and seeing like how many articles does that writer actually have to write this week? We don't know.
Yes. Software that gives more visibility into that is starting to pop up, but to have it alongside not just what they're currently working on, but what they're just overall responsible for as part of their accountability. Yeah, this is directly related to a lot of the things that we're looking at internally and just trying to do a better job of setting out who's responsible for what.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there are other features that I think are very important that I just did not get to. I won't get to them before I invite users. One is some sort of dates system to be able to set a date on a project, set due dates on tasks. That stuff is not there yet. And then a whole list of other features that I want to bring in. But I've been listening to, as always, Ben and Derek's podcast, especially Derek these days, because I feel like he and I are pretty close in terms of a timeline. He's a little bit ahead in terms of like inviting his first users. He was talking about his batch of like figuring out who on the list to invite. And that's something that I'm thinking about right now. So like yesterday I posted that video to Twitter, YouTube, the Facebook group, the Slack group. And so like people in there who respond to them, to those things, like I'm going to invite them first, but then I'm also going to look at the list and try to figure out like, should I invite the most recent subscribers? Should I invite the people who filled out a survey and they seem like the best fit for the product, or what, some combination of that? Like I'm trying to figure that out. But the first batch is really just like, I just need some users to get in there and show me some bugs that I couldn't uncover, but we'll see.
All right. Well, I guess the next few updates will be, you know, when reality hits, when the initial people start coming in and you start getting that feedback.
Yeah. I haven't really decided anything on in terms of when I would start charging people, I have not set up any sort of billing system. So it would be like manual. It'll probably be a couple of weeks of getting users in there for free before I start charging them.
Yeah, that's fine. I think our first 40 customers, I took the credit card over the phone.
Yeah.
Yep. Just literally, hey, your 4-week trial is over and you did great. And this is how much your pricing tier is. And let me know your phone number so I can give you a call. Yeah. Because I need to take your credit card over the phone. Sorry.
Another funny thing, I haven't really talked about this part of it much, is Ops Calendar, which was the quote unquote previous version of this product that I had built to, I hired developers to build 2 years ago. That's still been running. It's still running now. And it has some users and some paying customers on it. I can count them on like one hand at this point. But occasionally I'll actually get like support requests for Ops Calendar from Ops Calendar users, and like some pre-sales requests being like, can it do this? Can it do that? And I've been having to just reply and be like, well, no, it can't do that. And it's not going to do that. But you can check out Process Kit. That'll be the all new version of this product coming out soon. And I've been explaining that to people. And at some point, I think sometime in the next 2 weeks or so, I'm going to need to officially shut that down and redirect the traffic over and like, or do something about that. Like maybe the site will remain up, but the sign up link will point to a page that says, hey, check out Process Kit or something like that.
Right. Something that goes the next step to kind of making it stop.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Cause Ops Calendar now actually does get some pretty good organic traffic, and it built up a bunch of links, and so there is some pretty good juice pointing to Ops Calendar that I will want to strategically redirect over to Process Kit, especially like some links that are like, I think it ranks for some things on some content pages that we have. So I got to make sure that those, I don't do anything stupid about those.
Yeah, I know nothing about that stuff, but there are people out there that do. Cool, man. Well, on my side of things, you know, the biggest thing on my mind is in February, we hit profitability. And so I've been drawing this graph that I'll try to describe, you know, audibly here. So if you think about a traditional graph with an X and Y axis and a line that goes, you know, from the bottom left corner to the top right, and that call that revenue, right? And we're just going to smooth it out like it's a continual growth thing as opposed to what it really looks like, which is more stair step. But as revenue goes up in relatively stable line, what we've been doing with our burn is allowing ourselves to burn as we grow, and then they touch, right? The expense line and the revenue line touch, and we hit profitability.
Yeah.
And then
let's just pause for a second. That is a huge milestone for you and Carthook. I mean, February 2019, how long has it been? Has Carthook been going?
It's been 4 years, and we've hit this point before.
Yeah, I was wondering that. Like there must have been points where you were profitable before.
Yes, there were points that we were profitable, and it's been that same type of a graph. It's actually right behind me. If you see the line that goes up diagonally, and then there's really what looks like stairs next to it, and that's our burn. So it's like the expense line goes up beyond revenue, and we're burning, and then they meet. And we hit profitability, and then we purposely drive it up again, but not too much, right? So it's not a constant parallel line where you never hit profitability, you just continue burning. That's more the VC path. So we have this stair step approach, and right now we met. So we hit profitability, and now we are purposely extending ourselves. We're saying, okay, now let's hire and let's bring expenses beyond revenue, and we'll go back to burning. And so this is always the moment where it feels great to be profitable. It's great. It's just so stabilizing, and it gives you this confidence and calm. And every time before we purposely look at it and say, oh, that's nice that we're profitable, now let's immediately hire more and start burning $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month. And then I anticipate the stress. So now I'm there again. I'm saying, okay, we're in a good spot, and now we're going to extend ourselves. And of course, if the revenue continues to go up, it'll be the same thing where revenue expenses will meet in 3 to 6 months. And then we'll get into that, okay, now we're profitable again. And then we'll have, I am waiting for that moment where we hit that profitability and I don't feel the need to immediately extend ourselves again.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of the question on my mind right now is like, at what point do you start to just kind of bank the profit and really build that instead of build the team? The other thing that I'm wondering about growing the team at this point, like how many heads do you have now?
So number 20 started last week and number 21 is going to start next week. And we currently have 9 open positions.
The argument, obviously, to grow the team is to move faster. You can build more faster.
It's to capitalize on what we see as the opportunity that we will be leaving on the table if we don't have the ability, the capacity, the people, the resources to get after it.
Right. And so I'm wondering about, like, as you hire more people now, how much does it really accelerate your ability to ship product? And or how long does it take to feel that speed boost?
Yes. And it is it can be very frustrating because I'm marketing minded, right? I'm not technical and I want more offense and I want to be out in the market more. But historically, the product has been more resource hungry. And so when it comes down to, and the truth is, let's be honest about it, the product has driven the revenue. It has not been the marketing. The marketing has helped it along. But when we add a new feature and we add new functionality and we give people the ability to say yes, whereas they were saying no previously because of our ability to do something or be integrated with a certain tool. So the decision has constantly been, well, let's just put most of the resources toward engineering. And now for the first time is a little bit more balanced. So from our 9 open positions, 5 of them are here in Portland. So a director of content, right? That's a completely offensive minded role. Customer success, that helps with onboarding. An inbound salesperson, that helps to qualify and make sure the success and the onboarding team are only talking to qualified people. And it's like dialing in the sales process. But the engineering is still going to have its say. And so when we go beyond the initial 9, it'll be much more engineering heavy. So it's tricky and it's impossible to tell, but it certainly feels like the investment will be worth it and it will accelerate revenue. And so that's kind of the expectations I set out to everyone, where it's just so everyone knows exactly where we are, right? I'm very transparent about the profitability and the burn and all that and how much we have in the bank and what that means for runway and what that means for our negotiating power and being in a position to not need investment but only take it on if we want it. And so everyone understands, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what it's going to mean for burn. And you guys need to know 3 months from today, if revenue isn't going up the way it's supposed to go up, I'm going to be in a stressed position and I will not endanger the company. I will do what needs to be done to make sure the company is a good place. So it's like pretty clear on what that means, right? Like if it gets a little too weird for me and I'm uncomfortable, I'm cutting expenses. And so that takes the responsibility of potential layoffs from me and it spreads it around so everyone knows exactly what we're doing. And that way I'm not just holding it in myself and there are no surprises, especially the leadership and the execs. It's like, let's be 100% clear. There's no way I'm putting us in a bad position because there's no reason for us to be in a bad position. We're in a great position.
How do you think about the value prop that you're selling to your teammates? Because I've been thinking about that a lot.
Okay.
In audience house for a long time. Like, what's the value of someone first accepting a job offer from Cardhook and then staying with Cardhook longer than 2 years? Like instead of looking around to see what else might be out there.
So this is one of the biggest lessons of the past few weeks, where previously, if we wanted to hire, I just kind of stuck my head out the window and like waved my hand and some serendipity in an introduction. And it would just kind of happen because we were looking for 1 or 2 people and you really didn't have to do that much work for it. And it just kind of worked out. And that's ending. There needs to be a deliberate marketing for hiring.
Yeah.
It is. So I've
run into that a bit with audience apps.
Yeah. So So it's a competitive landscape. Companies in Portland are raising big money and hiring a lot of people at once. They're giving good benefits. They're paying high salaries. In order to differentiate, first, you just need attention. You need people to know that you exist. So right before this podcast, I was on a phone call with a journalist at the Portland Business Journal. So I've come to the conclusion, let's be more clear about it. People have helped me come to the conclusion about that I need to be much more outward facing, and I need to get over my general aversion to the Portland startup scene, if I'm being entirely honest. I just, don't feel the need to like get all the way up in there, and I need to. And so that value proposition that goes along with it needs to be strong.
For the reason of recruiting and getting better people.
Yes, exactly right. We want to attract talent. And right now we do want more senior people who have kind of been there and done that. And that's what we're looking for. And they need to know you exist, first of all. And then that value proposition is difficult. But we've talked about the different levers to pull, and you really have to
put it all together. And this even goes back to the conversation about funding. I mean, like, when you're VC backed, it's like money's not an issue. You can compete with the big tech companies,
and it gets amplified by the press.
But when you are looking at that graph of like this is the burn rate, these are the costs, this is the revenue graph. Like you must be thinking about salary caps and like salary ranges and benefits and like what you can compete on.
Right, we are working with reality, meaning like we care about profitability. We're not just willing to say, oh, hey, we have $6 million in the bank, so we're kind of fine just lighting that on fire over the next 2 years.
I mean, you have a team of like full time salary people. My team is more contractors, but I struggle with this question of like the value prop, especially the growth. How can people grow
within personal growth
the company? And I like honestly, if I'm honest with audience ops, like there are very few pathways that somebody can grow within the company. There is one I'm going to talk about it on today's podcast. One person is growing into a sales role now, but beyond that, there's really only been one other person who's grown into like a team manager role. Everyone else sort of like they are a writer or they are a copy editor or they are a podcaster, and to me what I'm selling to them from day one is like, if you're a freelancer, this is going to be the best, most steady freelance retainer that you've ever seen. I'm a client that pays on time twice a month,
right,
direct deposit. Forever. You get to be with a team in Slack. You get this steadiness to balance out your other freelance stuff that's come and go.
It's not a bad value prop.
And that's the thing. And it has kept people on the team for 3+ years in that capacity.
And that tells you it's definitely not a bad value prop.
But in like the past year, I've noticed a change in the market where, our rates aren't, we're not paying the highest that freelancers are demanding for this sort of work. But there are other benefits, like we deliver good quality client work to you. You don't have to do the sales and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, it's a puzzle. I mean, I think we have a more traditional startup value prop pitch. We basically tell people this is early days. You can come in, and I say a lot of things like, you won't hear the word no very often. You come up with an idea, it's very rare that someone's going to say, no, you shouldn't do that. Like if you take any initiative at all, you get the green light, man. And so we really want to make the proposition of it's not so early that we are on the verge of running out of money and everything's scary and I can't guarantee we make payroll and it's only 5 people and you have to do 100 jobs and work too many hours. But it's not mature that you come in and there's a big umbrella and it's boring, and sure, there are some benefits to that, but that's not what really excites you. It's this in between, very, very fluid. Nothing's going to stay the same. Every 6 months, something changes completely. And as the company grows, we would always prefer to hire internally if someone's doing a good job. And so as the company grows and these new positions get created, people internally will have the opportunity to point to it and say, just so we all are clear, I would love to get there. So one of our support people has been looking, it's just been getting really interested in code and teaching themselves JavaScript. And all of a sudden, hey, they have real talent. Like, when I walk past him and he's talking JavaScript, I'm like, this dude didn't know tech 6 months ago and he's all up in there now. And so he looked at the customer engineer role that is more technical and pays more. And he basically came to me and look, like, how do I get there? And we said, okay, here's the path. Here are the skill sets. And over the next 6 to 12 months, you can get there. And we would love to hire you for that role, then go externally.
With most roles, at least the way I think about it is like, there's always a baseline level of quality and competence that you need as a given in a role. It is a huge bonus if the person has already been in the culture and proven to be a solid team member. They already have working relationships with people that they could slip into a role. That's much easier and actually less risky than to hire outside if that opportunity is there.
You know? Absolutely. And to the more senior people, what I tell them is, look, I'm not going to pretend that this is the last job you'll ever have. And so what I want you to walk away from your experience at Carthook is to be able to point to it and say, we did this amazing thing and I was one of the most critical people that did it. And I can talk for hours about my role in taking a company from $1 million ARR to $100 million ARR and what we did and what we struggled with and all the stuff I learned. So I basically pitched them on the vision of this will change your career and the trajectory because we want everyone here to be able to point back and then people recognize, oh, you were at that company. That's awesome. And that gives you that credibility in your resume. It's like, you know, someone who was early in HubSpot. Like if someone early in HubSpot applies for our job, we take it seriously. We're like, they saw happen what we want to happen. Let's get that in here. I try to be humble in, look, I'm the CEO of a tech company. I don't have any business being the CEO of a tech company. I just kind of made it up and made it happen. And so, you know, what we talk about this with the execs where I want you to have the opportunity to prove yourself that you can be the CTO of a big tech company. You have the same right to give it a chance as I do. I just happen to be the person that no one can fire right now. So I want you to have the same opportunity of like, you have no business doing that either, but let's see if you can do it because I'm trying to do it too. Depending on the role and the position seniority, there's a pitch and a value prop to be made of you can make this your own thing and there's a lot of room to grow and I have no idea where it's going and let's see what we can do together.
Yeah. Well, like I said, with audience ops, it's different because everyone is doing other stuff outside audience ops for the most part. And that's encouraged. And the whole idea with audience ops is that it's like it's intended to be like a steady, consistent, solid chunk of your work week while you also go be a stay-at-home parent or other freelance work. Then I wonder about like those people who've been with us for a long time who've been great. Like, what if they start looking around to find something else? You know, we can and we have replaced people before. We do it all the time.
It hurts.
But it's a setback when it happens, you know, and
absolutely.
Especially when they've been awesome for so long. So
it is a combination of love and selfishness, right? You want them to love the people they work with. And you also want that selfish fire of like, oh, I'm not going anywhere. This thing is a rocket ship. Why would I leave this?
Right. But again, like the finances are different, but we're both working in profit oriented businesses. We're not in these more traditional companies where whether it's VC backed or just a larger, more established corporate entity that like where it's like the decision on pay raises and opening up new roles for people and things like that, like those things happen all the time at large companies, but for us, like that's you know, it's just not always an option, you know, and it's not like it's like, yeah, yes, I've been running this business for 4 years. I kind of wonder what people who look to work at a company like this think about what's available in terms of growth, you know, when coming to work for a bootstrapped company.
Yeah, it makes it more challenging when competing with people who don't have the same constraints. Absolutely. It does give you some more advantage in the authenticity in that love department, but it definitely makes it more challenging. I know for right alongside the finance worry of taking on all these new hires and all these new expenses is also an organizational worry where right now, when someone comes in and we go from one marketing person to two, it's not clear to everyone who reports to who and who's responsible for what and where's the overlap. And so that's like, it's a potential for problem and for tension because it's not clear. And a lot of these roles, we're going from one success person to two, one from one customer engineers to two, from one marketing person to two marketing people. And it's like, it feels very much like right now, if not sooner.
Yeah. The one to two is hard because it's like when there was one, they were the one.
It's clear. It's clear. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And so it really feels like now we need to do that work of an org chart, an accountability chart, a clear responsibilities and accountability. And it feels more necessary so that there isn't chaos when we go from 20 people to 30 people in the next 6 months. Because it feels like right now we just confront these issues on an individual basis. Someone who comes in and we say, oh, that's okay because we don't have this and therefore you both report to me. Or, you know, we're just kind of winging it and it's working out, but you could see the potential for chaos, especially if we wait too long. And then at 40 people, we say, oh, we've decided to do a reorg, and then that causes even more chaos. And then it might cause people to leave because they don't feel either respected or valued, or that what their expectation was, where they were going in the company isn't the same. And so it really feels like we have some work to do on that front right now, right before we hired these next, you know, 9-10 people.
That sort of brings up a question in my mind that I was going to bring to a private mastermind group, but in the spirit of just being open, why not, you know, talk about it on the podcast. Thinking about like one of my goals this year now with Audience Ops is, let's see if I can, first of all, remove myself from the sales role. That's been the one remaining responsibility that I've kept on my plate for the last few years. We could talk more about it in a minute, but just put somebody who is a manager into the sales role. But what I'm thinking about more broadly is, like, once that person is in place and they're doing the sales, my goal at that point is to, like, let's see if Audience Ops can continue to run and maybe even grow without any additional time on my part.
Right. Full owner, no longer operator.
Full owner, basically no longer operator. It would be great if the sales role works out for the next few months to a point where it's working out, business has not declined. So, hey, let's hire a marketing person to drive more leads to that salesperson, you know? And if that can run and let that person run with that task and I'm focused on Process Kit or whatever else, that would be a beautiful thing, because then it's like a business that truly runs and grows without me in the day to day.
And so what's missing in order for that to happen? Is it just the sales role, or is it like a management role alongside it?
That's the question in my mind. Mm-hmm. Is like, okay, like, all right, so I already have like the team operations delegated. We've had an outstanding team manager in place for more than 2 years. So all the day to day, all the client onboarding, all the dealing with the team, all the hiring of new writers and all that stuff is handled by someone else. I give my input and approval on stuff, but that's basically it. Soon the sales will be delegated. And then it's going to be kind of like that person is doing sales. This other person is kind of managing the team. But I'm still like the CEO. I don't have like a general manager or a general owner or and I don't have a head of growth. Like this salesperson, we can talk more about it, but it's somebody to handle the inbound sales leads that we currently have. It's that this new role for her is not going to be outbound prospecting or driving new leads to the funnel. It's just like I'm doing X number of sales calls a month. Now she's going to be doing those same calls every month. And
right, which sounds like the next short-term fix. So right before this call, I met up with a friend of mine here in town, Danny, and she does a lot of consulting on this side of organizational things. And what she helped me start to visualize was you want to remove the people. You want to just look at what the company needs and what positions the company needs. And then you start filling in your existing people, and then you'll start to see, oh, Jordan just happens to currently be responsible for these four positions. And over time, we'll no longer be the finance person and the COO and the CEO. But at least you're laying out what the business needs in order to function. And then you're filling it in with people, and you can see where you currently sit and where you're going to be replaced. But at least that will give you an idea of how far away you actually are from that full autonomy that you're seeking as just an owner, not an operator. And then you can see, oh, it's two more people, or it's two more roles beyond just sales, or it's actually just sales and growth. I don't know if that's necessary. Maybe it's just a marketer. Maybe it's an agency. But to lay it out that way, without the people, like organization, it's almost not personal. And then you can start to fill in the people.
I mean, the way that I see it now is like, okay, this person who's going from manager to sales, well, although she's going to continue doing client management stuff, which is one of the reasons I wanted to put her in the sales role, is because she knows, she communicates with clients all the time, and she knows what makes a really great client. And that's a big part of what I do with sales, is like I set expectations of like, here's what you can expect when you work with audience ops, and just want to make sure that you're totally clear on those expectations so that we fully deliver on them. And I feel like that's essentially the most important function of the sales role, I think, especially when it's inbound. You know, it's not like we need to convince anyone. They requested to talk to us. So
It's inbound. It's very different.
Yeah. So it's setting those expectations. And that's why I think she'd be great at it. And then the next step after that would be to find a marketer or someone to go drive some sort of outbound,
you know, to fill the funnel.
Take the current level of inbound leads and let's see if we can double or triple that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, I have ended up in the exact same place under the same exact logic.
Right. My bigger goal here is like, I am not working on audience ops.
Like, so all you have is your role and the boxes that you are currently in to also hire for, right? It really, that really should be the only difference between my position, your position, is that I don't want to replace myself as CEO and you do. But our businesses need what our businesses need. And it's which role should be ignored and which role should be addressed. Like right now, we need a sales team. It's just that we shouldn't hire for that right now. And when it's a big customer, I should do the sales the way I have been. And that's cool. And when it's smaller customers, then I shouldn't. But for us, we made the same decision on the, okay, we have the team to take the leads inbound and handle them. And so we were between hiring a salesperson to go out and generate their own leads and a marketer, like a director of content that would produce more leads for the existing system. And we said, that's just what's working. And let's just double down on what's working as opposed to trying this new channel. So similar, like once you get the person dialed in on the inbound, then generate more inbound.
Today, I don't do much work at all on audience ops. I'm just there to answer questions and make any final decisions that come to my inbox. Like it's, other than that, it has become a very, very passive income business for me. That to me is the beauty of running the productized service, because it's funding all my time to learn to code and work on the process kit. I've just been sort of struggling with the idea of like what happens when I have a business that does completely run without me, and like do I have some obligation to put a true owner in place, like a true business manager or leader or something, like even though I still own the business, like it's,
I don't know, there are no rules, know? And guilt should not govern any of these decisions. I know my younger brother deals with this a lot because he runs Crunch gym franchises. So when he had one location, he felt the need to be there all the time. Then he had two locations and you realize, well, you can't be there all the time. And then you have three locations and you're like, oh, I actually shouldn't be there ever, because I have another responsibility entirely to find the next place and work out the real estate agreement. And there's a lot of guilt that came along with that of like, all these people work for me and I just never even show up. And you have to get over that, because that's not your job. And yeah, it's a bit harsh in that way. And I think our generation isn't used to being harsh in business in that way of like, these people work for me and I pay them, and therefore I don't feel guilty about it at all.
Got anything else?
This week was classic start off on one end of the spectrum, super frustrated, super upset, mad at my team, calling meetings on how we're going to go faster, do we need to fire people, like all ragey, and then just ending the week on like, everything's great. Everything's going to work out nicely. So it was definitely a bit of a schizophrenic episode. And we're after this podcast, we're going to go into our biweekly WACUS meeting. And I think we have a lot to talk about there because we've had a very mixed 2 weeks, a lot of real frustration from customers and a lot of love. So it's just sorting through that. And the way I put it to the exec team recently was our job is to stare the problems right in the eye and then execute on them. The defensiveness, the pretending or being overly pessimistic or overly optimistic or pretending something isn't a problem is the exact opposite. We need to be able to look it right in the eye and then not look at it as this personal, oh, your area is not doing well, therefore you're doing a terrible job and you're a bad person and whatever else. It's just, no, let's just acknowledge all the bad stuff and all the good stuff and then just execute. That helps us maintain the emotional stability because it goes up and down pretty wildly.
Yeah, man. I think that's all we got.
Cool, man. Well, it's great to catch up. We're going to enjoy a nice weekend. I'll give you and everyone else the heads up. I am traveling for the next 3 Fridays in a row. So if we don't get a chance, we'll try to plan out other days other than Friday to record. But if not, it might be a few weeks until we come back.
Yeah, it might be another gap in the old Bootstrap web feed. Uh-oh.
The hiatus.
Yeah, and I just booked for my family a 3-week trip through Europe in June, which I'm pretty excited about. Actually, just getting back to the sales role, one of my goals for that is like start training them now. And by mid-June, it'd be great if I can go on that trip and not have to do any sales calls. So
there is an endless fountain of satisfaction when you are doing something enjoyable and the business grows. It is, holy shit, it takes so long to get there. So long to get there. But when you're traveling or on vacation or away for a weekend or something, you just check into your Slack and it's just like doing its thing. So good. Yeah. That's a
and
good.
I don't mind like traveling and doing some work and being and having the computer with me and stuff. I just hate traveling and having calls on my calendar.
Obligations. Yeah.
I want nothing on the calendar. That's the goal. Yeah.
I like that. Cool, man. Good to catch up. Thanks, everybody.
Later.